Welcome to Hollywood Horsepower, the show about the story behind the story. We have been gone for a while. This is our first week back. We're coming into our second season, and we're really excited about this. I'm joined today by a very special guest, a guy that's like family to me, Big A, Anthony Stabile. He is a legend in horse racing, family to me, and probably one of the best all-around guys there is, and really the guy that got me interested in this. So, Big A, welcome to the show.
Mark, how are you? Welcome back to Season 2.
We're really excited, and there's no better way to kick it off than to do it with you.
I agree.
So, how have you been? I know, we'll just dive right into it. I know you've got a lot of new stuff going on.
Yeah, everything's for the most part good. Yeah, I'm on a travel-related medical leave from my race calling duties at Finger Lakes. Everything's okay. Getting healthy, losing some weight. In the meantime, started a YouTube channel and show of my own, The Big Time with the Big A. It is a traditional talk show.
And I've watched it. It's great, as you'd expect.
Thank you. It dawned on me that nobody had ever done it and put it together. We have a guest. We have some different segments and features, and we're 3 episodes in. I've had some fun guests. Trevor McCarthy talked about his recent retirement from the saddle. Matt Dinnerman, who last year when I fell ill, spelled me up at Finger Lakes. He's the racetrack announcer over at Oak Lawn and Monmouth Park. And most recently, Kendra Carmouche, another guy that the racing world absolutely loves and adores. He's great with his fans. And we've had 3 episodes, and we're chugging along. Next one will be out in a few weeks. And I'm having an absolute blast. It's just a lot of fun to get to know these people. And not, you know, a lot of the time, and I don't have to tell you, having done and are doing this show, a lot of the time, I think you know about these guys and gals, but when you're interviewing them, you find out even more.
That's the whole premise of this show. It's like the story behind the story. No, that's the part that I love about all of this. I love hearing those stories.
Yeah, we have a segment on the show, 5.5 Questions, which I started back in my radio days with when you and I met.
And I remember that.
It is so much fun to get some answers. You'd think you're going to get these generic and kind of cookie cutter answers, but Kendrick Carmouche in the last show gave two answers. I didn't know who the horse and the people were. So it's, you learn and you're entertained at the same time. And it's just, it's fun for me to get to know these guys and gals, like I said, even better than I already do. And, you know, like I said, we have some other segments. We have a charity segment where we take one of those little horse racing desktop games, and we have the Down and Dirty Derby, and we pick charities that we're playing for, and me and the guest for the night. Now, like I said, we have other segments and stuff. A Man About Town segment called Bad Beats and Bingos, where we talk to fans about some tough beats or some big scores they've made, and I counter with the opposite. We do a nod to my days at the New York Post called The Postscript, where I kind of look back at a race or look ahead to some things I'm looking forward to in the next few weeks or the second half of the season. We did the half season awards on the last episode, and what I'm looking forward to going forward. So it's just a whole lot of fun. And like I said, the fact that nobody's ever really done this in a traditional talk show format is really fascinating to me. And I guess the advent of podcasts, it's a little different when it's just audio. And we're out on all the audios as well. We're on everywhere you can listen. We're on now. But go to the YouTube channel, Big Time with the Big A, And
I did. Yeah, we need to plug that too. Big Time with a Big A on YouTube.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We're on Twitter.
But you guys are also on podcast platforms, correct?
Everywhere.
Or you will be?
Well, we already are. Big Five.
Okay, good.
So we're on the Big Five. Everywhere you get your podcast fix, you can listen. Use a fella in Rockville Center here named Jay Belsky. His Floored Media does a fantastic job. And he has about a dozen other shows emanating from the studio. It's about 20 minutes from my house. Built a friendship with him and a relationship with him. So, yeah, you know, got a strong team around me, and it's just been a whole lot of fun. We're just, you know, just moving forward and taking it step by step.
That's great. So for anybody just joining us, we're joined today by Anthony Big A Stabile. We're talking about his new show on YouTube and podcast, Big Time with the Big A. For anybody, because our audience is a little more diverse, not just horse racing, explain a little bit about, like, the premise of your show. Is it strictly horse racing, or do you get into other guests, or what? How do you choose your people?
So for now, I'm looking to build to a network, and the Big Time with the Big A is the cornerstone show of the Fun and Games Network. So there'll be other shows on the network at some point, and
maybe Hollywood and Horsepower.
Yeah, there you go. We will spread our wings a little bit. Right now it's horse racing, but it's not really a gambling show, Mark. As you know, all of these podcasts out there, everybody's trying to, you know, sell you something or put up a ticket. No ads on the show right now, no sponsors. So it's, you know, and then we're looking for that, but, you know, it's kind of just me unchained. And, you know, we've worked together professionally, and you're one of my closest friends. Personally, you know, I could be very entertaining when I'm unchained.
No, but I say unchained. You are, and I'm not just saying this because we're like family. I'm saying you are a natural at this. So
I appreciate that.
It's terrific. I'm really happy for you, and I really think it's a good idea. I agree with you 100%. It's kind of one of those things that you look at it, and it's like, I can't believe somebody else hasn't done this already. But it makes sense, because I agree. There's so many talking heads, especially in any sport, not just horse racing. But everybody's got an angle. Everybody's got, you know, I always joke around, because everybody says to me, well, you know, who do you like to bet on? I said, here's the problem. I don't really know much about it. As long as I've been around it, which is nothing compared to you, but I mean more than most people, I still don't know a lot about it. And I told him, I said, here's the problem. The closer you get to the industry, you're going to meet 10 people that will tell you 11 horses that can't lose.
Yeah.
It's almost more confusing.
You know, our fan base is literally and figuratively dying off. I don't necessarily think that you need to dive right into the handicapping and gambling to be a fan of our sport. So maybe we can cultivate fans this way. And, you know, I think people are sick of just having tickets and selections thrown at them. I think there's a place for it. I think America's Day at the Races and Saratoga Live, which the New York Racing Association puts on, do it a lot less than everyone else. They have a lot of nice features on there. And then, you know, they have guys and gals on there like Acacia Clement and Andy Serling and Lafitte Pinkai and Maggie Wolfendale and Paul LaDuca, who bring Richie Migliori, who won over 4,400 races. You know, they have people, very talented people, that not only will give you their selections, but they will explain why, and they will give you some history to the game. And I think that's important because, the thing I love most about horse racing is getting to solve the puzzle, the handicapping aspect of it anyway. The thing I love most about horse racing is all the characters that are in the game. it's literally a Damon Runyon novel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why some of his best work was set at the racetrack.
Leonard.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's my favorite part. But, like, I like to figure out the puzzle. Well, I don't want to sit around. And listen, people pay me to do this, right? I still, in my off time now at Finger Lakes, I've been doing the show. I've also been continuing my gigs up at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. You know, people come out, and I was never the kind of person that just wants to tell you, I like Sovereignty in the Derby. I'm going to tell you why I like Sovereignty in the Derby. I'm going to tell you why I think journalism is the horse to beat. I'm going to give you the scenarios in which I'm saving my bet by reversing it. Which, you know, it's important, I think, to educate while getting new people to wager on the game. You know, because they shouldn't just be reliant on what we're telling them. You want to try to teach them to be able to let them spread their wings and fly on their own and start handicapping on their own. So it's one of the things we're actually doing over at the Fun and Games Network. We started, and we haven't posted anything yet, but we're going to do some Learning the Game is the name of the segment. So, and they're going to be separate shorts that we will tweet out on, you know, we'll get out on social media. You'll be able to go to the YouTube page to watch them as well. I'm going to try and dress them up with some bells and whistles and stuff. But, you know, basically just like teaching what the wages are. And we're going to start, you know, we'll start with teaching them what the wages are. And then we'll go into maybe how to handicap a race. Obviously, you know, that's a very, part of the reason it's so hard to get new people to bet on this sport is because there's just so much going on. It's not like looking at a baseball game.
And somebody coming from the outside in, myself, you look at a racing form. Now, to you, a racing form is as clear as day because you grew up with it. To me, a racing form reads like an IRS guideline.
Yep.
It's not intuitive. Like, you don't just glance at it and figure it out.
Howard, and I remember my last full-time, real relationship. I'm trying to work on that now. I would spend, when the Breeders' Cup comes along, there's a month. You know, I turned to my girlfriend. I was like, you know, Smoke, listen. I'm probably not going to see you too much for the next 2.5 weeks. Because once those GPs come out, it's, you know, you dive in. Now, the Breeders' Cup is 14 races, and it's a horrible example. But if you're doing the right amount of work on a race card, you're spending 3 hours on it.
Yeah. No, I agree. In fact, it's funny you say that because, you know, from Hollywood, and I love the fact that racing, one of the things that I love the most, and I had Billy Koch on this show, and we actually talked about this, was the connection between Hollywood and horse racing. And as you know, his family was Hawk Koch and Howard Koch, and, you know, they're basically, you know, legends in Hollywood. But that, you know, horse racing was always part of it. One of the things that was kind of interesting to me was, you know, you get the impression from Hollywood that a handicapper is a guy with a cigar and a racing form in his pocket, you know, running up and buying tickets. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, it's actually just the opposite. It's like a guy with a laptop doing math equations. You know, I said, it's very...
No. I think that's misleading. I think there's room for both.
You look at these guys, look at like some of these guys, these big handicappers. They're like, just like you said, they put hours and hours into this.
Yeah, well, I put hours and hours into it, and I'm the guy with the racing form rolled up, running to I don't run, but limping to the window with my cigar in my mouth. That's me.
No, I agree with that, but what I'm getting at is it isn't like an impulse as much as it looks like. There's a lot of back, you know, research that goes into it before that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, I'm not saying there aren't the occasional, you know what, I got a feeling about this, and I'm going to throw a little bit on him. But I think the vast majority of the big tickets are planned out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you got a plan. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's so difficult. Like, you know, let's say you're playing a wager, like a pick four or a pick five, right? You gotta scope out your ticket. You gotta figure out your bankroll. You gotta find some value in there, because you don't want to just go favorite. You're not going to make any money. So you have a lot of decisions to make. If you go to make a three-team baseball parlay, let's say, you have three decisions to make. You have three to six decisions. I'm not talking about these crazy prop bets. You gotta. Who do you like to win? Do you like the over/under? That's it. That parlay, if you know your sport, that parlay should take you 10 minutes to craft. Whereas in horse racing, you can be there every day, gambling every day, handicapping every day, like I do, and you could have horses shipping in from other jurisdictions, trainer changes, jockey changes. There are so many different variables, right? I was talking about this with a friend of mine yesterday, or Sunday, actually. So this with a friend of mine Sunday. We were talking about which athlete has the most control over a game, because, of course, there are these allegations now. Last week came out one of the pitchers might have been manipulating the prop bets of throwing a wild pitch on the first pitch, and they're finding some bad gambling patterns. And we were talking about who has the most, the biggest effect on an outcome. And you know, there were five of us sitting in my friend Andy's backyard playing horses, and nobody mentioned jockey. They were talking about a starting pitcher in baseball, the quarterback in football, the goalie in hockey, which is probably my answer. My answer is probably the goalie in hockey has the biggest effect on the outcome of a sporting event. I think if you were looking to taint an event, and, you know, and trying to pull a little bit of a fugazi, as we like to say here in New York, I think if you get to a hockey goalie, he's the one that has the biggest outcome on an event. Because you could be a starting pitcher and be as bad as you want. A, you're going to get pulled, and B, your offense can still bail you out. Right? If you're a tainted goalie, you can, but nobody said jockey. And I think a jockey has a tremendous outcome on an event. They don't let you cancel your ticket if your jockey gets changed, but they'll kill a baseball wager if the starting pitcher gets changed. So, again, just all of these variables that come into play, and it gets overwhelming for newcomers. But we're going to try and teach them a little bit. We're going to try to bring them along slowly so that they're not dependent on just watching an expert's picks and just firing away. That we want to try and cultivate new fans and let them groom their own opinion.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I do think that there's an absolute need for it, because it is something where I think, as you said, and I don't mean this negative, but I feel like the fans, for lack of a better word, are dying off. We need to attract more people. And I say it all the time on this show. There really is no better place for an afternoon than going to the races. And the beauty of it is, you know, you don't have to be a really good handicapper. There are so many things, everything from hospitality to, you know, enjoying a great meal and just enjoying the weather and sitting there watching the horses. Even if you don't even understand what you're doing, it's still a good day. And then
I'll make my way to Saratoga at some point this year.
I figured.
I didn't go last year. It'll be the first time I'll be in Saratoga as a fan since 2011. I have worked in some capacity.
I need to get up there too, so you and I should coordinate that.
We can do that
when you're going.
I am looking so forward to taking my fat guy Coleman chair, a little Mets soft cooler, three cigars, sitting with my buddies Phil and Tim in the backyard. I usually sit. Tim usually gets a spot, great spot right by the jocks room, able to see the horses walking in and out of the paddock, which is important to me when I formulate my opinion. Great spot, bunch of TVs around there, windows aren't far away. I am looking so forward to doing that.
So that kind of, that was on my list. That kind of brings me to something I wanted to talk about. Again, from somebody who came from the outside, I didn't grow up in horse racing. I've been around it now since like 2011, but I didn't grow up in it. It's interesting to me, the Saratoga, Del Mar, you know, chemistry, for lack of better words. There is no middle ground there. People can appreciate both, but make no mistake, they love one or the other, and they appreciate the other one. And it is, I think personally, now, as you know, I'm a Del Mar guy. I've always been palm trees and the sun.
Well, you're not a racing guy. But racing at Del Mar sucks.
Well, no, no, but I mean, it's a hospitality thing. It's just the history. You're walking the halls, and you know, this is something that Bing Crosby started. It's just interesting. But I agree with you. But now here's the funny thing, Saratoga, I have always been in awe of because it is such a loyal fan base. I love talking to people there and hearing their stories because they started coming there with their grandpa or their dad or their uncle, and they've been coming to the same week, getting the same picnic table for the same, you know, for 40 years. And I can't think of another track that has that.
Nobody has it. Nobody, listen.
Interesting dynamic. The other thing that really struck me was how many people go there and sit out under the trees in the backyard, as you say, and never even walk up to the track.
Well, a lot of them do.
I had a couple of brothers in Maryland, and they're like, yeah, we never go up there. And they said it started out as kind of almost accidental, like we just never walked up there. And now we just don't do it out of tradition.
Yeah, I mean, I've sat in the box area for meets and all day, and you know, I'm not a big. I've seen enough races in person where I do kind of hunker down for the day in the backyard when I'm
but
there
you,
as a fan.
But you have to agree that's definitely unique to Saratoga.
It's not unique to Saratoga. I've seen it in other places. It just looks different because there's so many people at Saratoga. The fan base is basically the whole town is the fan base. And then you add on the people coming up for the meet, and it's an enormous surface area of people to grab from. That's why there's 10,000
So it's interesting because from my perspective, again, from the outside, it's really interesting. I've always been intrigued with history. So, I mean, not like sitting there reading about George Washington, although it's some interesting. But, you know, what really intrigues me is, like, people's story. I mean, it's the premise for this show, story behind the story. So I love talking to people. I just like wandering around meeting people up there and hearing how they came to come there. And it is amazing to me how many people have been coming there for decades. And I go to, you know me, I go to a lot of tracks. I don't run into people that say that at the other places. Even Del Mar. Now, Santa Anita, you do. And when Hollywood Park was open, you did there. Hollywood Park, to me, was similar, not the backyard feel, but the tradition feel. Like, people had been going there since they were kids with their grandfather.
But that's everywhere. You're just not going to think to ask that at Charlestown because, you know, and I think a lot of people take their tracks for granted. See, let me explain that. In New York, when I was a kid growing up, Aqueduct, Belmont, or Saratoga, I want you to think about how crazy this stat is. Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga, when I was 10 years old, 12 years old, never went more than 2 days without racing. Ever.
Yeah.
They would run at Belmont on Monday. We used to race 6 days a week. Wednesday to Monday. Tuesday was the only dark day. They would run on closing day at Belmont on Monday, put the tote board on a tractor trailer, drive it up to Saratoga in the middle of the night, install it Tuesday, and racing would begin Wednesday. Saratoga was only 4 weeks. Saratoga was 4 weeks, Wednesday to Monday. For basically the old tagline was the August place to be. And maybe they were there for a couple of days in late July. That was it. 24 racing days.
The whole year around it.
24 racing days, 4 6-day race weeks. That was it. Now there's 10 days between meets sometimes. They'll close on Labor Day. I believe Labor Day is the first this year. Racing doesn't return until September 11th at Belmont. Well, at Aqueduct. The Belmont and Aqueduct meet since Belmont's being built right now. So it's a different landscape. But we took that for granted. You know, you'd go to other places. Oakland Park doesn't have racing for 6 months out of the year in this day and age. And they only race 3 or 4 days a week.
Look at Keeneland. I mean, Keeneland and Lexington, which, you know.
Right, but you have Churchill and you have Ellis. I'm talking about there are places.
Oh, yeah. Like a state. Yeah.
So you take it for granted.
No,
right?
True.
California is a little bit of a bigger state than New York.
Well,
is.
And California is losing it because it used to be, it was kind of like New York where there was racing somewhere. But now it's starting to get some spread between it, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you almost take it for granted. Like, we would go to Aqueduct the middle of October and not leave until after the Kentucky Derby. Like, you were locked into Aqueduct for 7. It's my favorite place on earth. Be locked in for 7, 7.5 months. So, you kind of take that for granted. People aren't going to tell those stories about Aqueduct because they got on the A train or jumped in their car and drove 12 minutes. They're going to tell the story about Saratoga because they got in their car for 4 hours. They were only there for 2 days. They had to stay an hour away because they couldn't afford the hotel. Like, it's a trip. It's a vacation.
Oh, and
it's a destination.
That's the other thing. It's fun to me to listen to the stories. I've heard everything from staying an hour away to, I met two brothers that both worked for the Postal Service in Maryland, and they camped in their car in a parking lot and would go to like a local gym and shower and then come to the track and eat bologna sandwiches, and they could not have been happier. This was the highlight of their year. They planned it. They had done it for 40-plus years, and they would come up. That was their vacation. They would spend it at Saratoga. And it was funny because 6 a.m., they're sitting there at the gate with their cooler, and when those gates open, they sprint for a picnic table.
7 o'clock.
Put a camp out.
Running on the bull.
It's just so, it's interesting to me. I mean, I love the tradition. I like the fact that people, you know, have done it over and over and over again. I just think it's cool. I mean, those are the things that I like about it. I love the fact, you know, I get just excited at Del Mar. So, I mean, there's, to me, that's one of those places where if the halls could talk, right? You walk through there and here's pictures of Desi Arnaz. Here's pictures of Bing Crosby. And, you know, it almost looks like an old Hollywood museum.
Yeah, I've never been, I guess. Listen, I'm a very anti-West Coast guy. I have a big East Coast body.
Come on.
So it's very hard for me. No, because here's what you want to know why? As a racing traditionalist, the amount of celebrities that have passed through Saratoga is probably just as big and illustrious.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't need to rely on that. I mean, look, the job they've done at Saratoga, and people will say that, you know, there could be too much of a good thing. And I don't necessarily disagree with that notion in general. But from top to bottom, from their on-track attendance to the handle, which is it casts such a big shadow on the rest of the year that you can't really fault them for getting as much out of Saratoga as they possibly can.
No, I guess that brings up a good question. How do you think that will affect attendance this year, having more time there?
I think they'll be fine. You know, 4th of July is a very expensive time of year to go anywhere, so I'm not going to hold those days against them. But, you know, I think the meet will be fine. I think, you know, because the traditional meet starts on Thursday, July 10th. So,
okay.
that's considered opening day, even though they've been there for a week and they were just there a month ago for a week for the Belmont State. They have updated the facility. There is all kinds of hospitality if you want to sit down and have a meal. There is all sorts of grab-and-go kind of food. The backyard is still big and illustrious and plenty of places. You know, 7 o'clock, you go to the run for the Bulls to go get your table. There's plenty of space front side. They have the best track announcer in the game in Frank Miramati taking you through the day. He's the absolute best, top. And they put on, I think, the best television product. So they have you covered, whether you are on track or off track. I don't think anybody has you covered better than Saratoga. And this is coming from a guy.
I will say it is pretty easy to navigate. So it's one
this
of those
is coming from a
that
guy.
Even though it's expensive, you can make it work. Like when I've gone there, I've stayed 20 minutes away. I'm not going to give all my secrets up, but I've stayed less than 20 minutes away and found very reasonable accommodations.
This is coming from me. I don't love Saratoga like these other people do. I wouldn't lose any sleep if I never went there again.
See, I find it interesting. I don't have the same, like, I couldn't go up there and camp in the dirt and get rained on all day and still be smiling. Not like those people. I've seen those guys sitting there with trash bags on when it's raining.
Yeah, but I'm not doing that for anything. I mean, maybe a Mets World Series.
But I will say this. I admire the commitment. I like the fact that there are those people out there that are that happy doing that.
I remember being at a Giants game. This is back in 2021. I remember being at a Giants game, just started dating a gal. And we were there with a couple of my buddies, and it was pouring. And I was like, well, and me and her had known each other for a while, and I was just like, well, I'm not going to be the first one to cave here. And I know she's tougher than a $3 steak, and she's not going to cave either. So I texted my buddy Evan, and I was like, you gotta pull the plug on this because she's not going to budge, and I'm not going to budge. Somebody's got to go here. So Evan kind of brought it up, and I said to her, I was like, listen, you're not leaving, and I'm not leaving, but he wants to go. I was like, we could just declare this a draw. And it was the first of many draws over 2 years of tumultuous bedlam.
You know me. I'm not going.
I'm
a fair-weather fan.
I'm not getting up at 7 in the morning to run for a table. I'm not sitting there under a canopy when it's raining. I'll sit in my house, fire in my Naira Bets account, and watch Saratoga live.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. That's what I mean. I'm good with that. So I have a great setup for the summer.
Segue here. Who are the top restaurants there that must-sees in Saratoga?
So my problem is I don't really have any places anymore.
Really?
Yeah. No,
what was the Italian place that we went to a couple of years ago?
I don't have any places anymore.
Wow.
Just a lack of loyalty. So I don't promote anybody up there. I heard Osteria Danny was under new ownership and management. I won't endorse any other Italian place. There's a place called Caputo's, which is pretty good. It's off of exit 15. It's a pizzeria. It's not like a real fancy sit-down place. It's cloth napkins, but they also have fantastic pizza. Dave Portnoy gave it like an 8.2 or an 8.3, which not that Dave is the be-all, end-all, but just for his fans out there to give it a little credence. He gave it like an 8.2 or an 8.3. The pizza's really good. The food's excellent. So I'll run up to Caputo's. Prime Steakhouse at the golf course has also undergone some management changes. I was always a big fan of Prime when I was up there. So those would be my two spots when I head up. If you're in town, there's a place called Druthers. They make a mean burger, and I love the mac and cheese skillets. So, you know, there's a little something. There you go. There's some pub grub. There's some pizza and Italian food, and there's a traditional steakhouse. Those are the three places. Caputo's for the pizza and the Italian, Druthers for the pub grub, Prime Steakhouse at Saratoga National Golf Course if you're looking to have a real fancy sit-down meeting at a table outside. right on a little lake. It's nice.
The restaurants, you know, those are some great, great ones. You're probably going to laugh at me, but one of the ones that I like, which is not fancy, I don't know what it is. Maybe Memories with the Kids, something. There's a place down by Albany called The Standard. You ever been there?
No.
It literally feels like you're going into a Vegas show for the Rat Pack. Like nothing but pictures of Sinatra and Martin all over the walls. Literally an old time, you know, Vegas, nightclub feel. The food, I would give it a 6. It's okay. It's not over the top. It's more the atmosphere. It's just one of those, you know, they're playing all Rat Pack music. It's one of those places that's just kind of, you know, you go in there and you leave with a smile. You know what I mean?
If you're letting me expand and get out of Saratoga, in Schenectady, down in Schenectady, there's an Italian place called Ferrari's. It's not in the best neighborhood. It is worth the trip. It is an old school Italian restaurant, no frills. The portions, I'm going to give it to you like this. You've met me, you've obviously met me, and you met my buddy Phil. We both took leftovers home. The portions are enormous. But more importantly, the food is delicious. The guy who runs the place is another big A. And the food is sensational. If you're up for a 25-minute drive from Saratoga, go find Ferrari.
And I think most people are, because when you're there for any length of time, you're going to start exploring, venturing out, right? You know, for one reason, it gets hard to get into restaurants. And two, you kind of get tired of fighting the crowds, right? At least I do. It's like I'm driving 20.
You got to understand something, though. You're talking to a guy that, for the bulk of the time I was up there, 12 to 14-hour work days are not, they're the norm.
Yeah.
So there are plenty of days where I don't feel like getting in my car and driving 25 minutes down to Ferrari's, where a bowl of Frosted Flakes was dinner. And I'm sorry.
I'm talking about the average fan that goes up there.
That's different. There were nights when I did the harness shows and we were there at 11 o'clock where you can bet my dinner was cereal. I got home at 11:15, poured a bowl of cereal because I had to be up at 7 o'clock to go host breakfast the next morning.
Yeah.
So people take that kind of for granted. When you're working a full meet up there, it can get to you. And remember, up until 2018, we only had one day off. Tuesday was the only off.
I think it's interesting you say that, because people always say that to me, too, because you know what I do. I mean, you know, I work, my day job is working for manufacturers. I do branding and marketing, sponsorships. And everybody always thinks that side of it's glamorous. And it's funny because, like, most of the big races that I've been involved in, and you know this, it's like you're up at 5 a.m. getting ready so that you can be somewhere to be on the air to do a quick interview. Then you've got to hobnob around, go see some sponsors, go do this. I mean, it's like 5 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then you're probably going to dinner with somebody.
Yeah, it's rough.
I enjoy what we do, and I know it's not even, you know, there are people out there stacking boxes on crates that are thinking, you know what, you have no idea what a tough day is.
Right, you got a pair of balls to complain about this. 100% right. I was just about to say that. But, you know, it's not like there's a lot of, I'll put it to you like this. We're certainly not working hard as hard as most people, but we're working kind of long hours, and it still takes a toll on you.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is like the hardest job you'll love. And I know people say that, like, it's like, how could it be hard? It's like, it's interesting. And I know you're the same way. In this industry, you interact with a lot of celebrities, a lot of what I would call known people. I think the reason that we tend to click with those people is we kind of live the same life, not financially, but as far as travel and the hours and the schedule and running nonstop. I honestly think that's part of the reason why we tend to end up knowing these people and becoming friends with them, is because we understand their world, and they understand ours.
I also think they like the role reversal. Like, I'll tell this story. I've never really told this story, I don't think, on air. So, in the summer, during the COVID summer, I got pretty close with Coach Bill Parcells, Hall of Famer, two-time Super Bowl champ. Coach is a great guy. To the point where in 2022, I was his neighbor. We lived in the same apartment building for the 2022 meeting. So in 2020, we got friendly over. We were going to the same place during COVID. And then in 2021, we're hanging out a lot in the box area. And I was hosting breakfast at Saratoga in 2021. And I was standing over by the customer service booth. Because the office, I would get there at 7, host breakfast from 7:30 to 10, go downstairs, get the scratches, make any changes to my selections, go put my suit on, co-host Talking Horses, and that was a day. So I had about a half hour of downtime, and there was a Dunkin' Donuts right outside of the Dunkin' Donuts booth right outside the customer service, so I always grab a Dunkin' and just kind of sit outside and just, you know, lollygag a little bit. And Coach came over one day. He got there early. He wanted to go sit up in the box. It was a pick six carryover. A bunch of us putting a ticket together. And he's like, he's standing there and he's talking to me. And this is Bill Parcells, right? It's Bill Parcells. I mean, there's not too many NFL coaches with bigger recognition in the history of the game than Bill Parcells. And he looks at me, and there's a couple standing about 20 feet from us. He looks at me, and he goes, "One of the coolest things is about to happen to you." I said, "What's that?" "Did you see those people that have been staring at us?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "They're not staring at us. They're staring at you." He goes, "I'm going to walk away, and they're going to come over to you." I was like, "You're out of your mind." He said, "I'll bet you lunch." I said, "You got it." So we bet lunch. He's like, "All right, Big A, I'll see you later." He does it big and loud. "All right, Big A, I'll see you up there." Coach turns on his heels and walks away. Sure enough, this couple came walking right over to me. And he looked back and he smirked. And I said to them, I was like, so I took a couple of selfies, answered a couple of questions. I was like, "You guys know who that is?" And the wife was like, "No." The husband looked like, "He looks kind of familiar, but we came here to see you." And I was just like, okay. I was like, "That was Coach Bill Parcells." And the guy was like, "The football guy?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yeah, don't care about that." And I was just like, "What the hell is going on here?" Right? Because, you know, I would take a selfie with the coach and jokingly send it to my friends. "Hey, what are you guys doing today?" And everybody would flip out. It's Bill Parcells. It was I can honestly say, because I'm a half an egomaniac, it was one of the coolest moments of my life. And it wasn't a setup, and he didn't know the people. It was one of the coolest moments of my life. People were waiting to talk to me when they could have spoken to a guy that won the Super Bowl twice.
And it is kind of funny. Like, you wonder if they knew who he was. They obviously didn't.
Right, but he knew. I remember going up to the boxes that day. He's like, "I'll take two hot dogs with sauerkraut, please." I was like, "Yeah, I figured as much." And we called the waitress over, and I picked up lunch. But it was just a real fun, and that's what it is about being, when you're up there, and those are the perks to being up there. Listen, I had an old spot I used to go to. I didn't pay for dinner. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I don't buy many drinks up there. There were times where I would take my humidor, like, as you know, I love smoking my cigars. And I would talk with whoever was co-hosting on radio with me or on TV. You know, Andy would say to me, "Where are we doing? We have radio today?" "No, no radio today. I'm going to go sit in the backyard with my people, smoke a couple of cigars and bet some horses." And he used to joke around. I would say, "My people." And then we would come off the set. There'd be 10 people waiting to take selfies with us. It's great. But I can't tell you if I said on radio one day to our buddy Jude Feld, you know, like, "What are we smoking later?" And I would say, like, "I'm going to grab one of my Rocky Sungrowns." I can tell you that more often than not, within a week, somebody walked up to that radio set or walked up to the Talking Horses set and had a Rocky Patel Sungrown for me. or an LFD double the hair. It was funny, you know, because I'm pretty active on my Twitter. I would get on there and I would talk to people about it. I'm seeing you tomorrow with a box of cigars. And the guy would show up, or the gal would show up with a box. I remember one time this woman showed up and I was just like, this is not necessary. My husband and I made a ton of money on the horse yesterday. He went right to our cigar shop. And I was just like, they are the most rabid racing fans in the world. They're listening, they're watching, they're gambling, they're having fun, they're generous people. I mean, it's a long day, but man, the people up there make it worth it. It's a fun place. It's a real fun place. I'm looking forward to this year.
I've said that many times. This is an accessible sport. You know, I've covered a lot of different sports. I work with automotive.
Not even close. It's not even close. We're the most accessible sport there is.
And it is, that's one thing I think that's really unique. And that's one thing I always encourage people to go to the track, even if you don't understand it, you know, because, people are kind, people are accommodating. It's amazing. You could run into a Hall of Fame trainer and he'll stop and talk to you. You don't see that in other sports.
It's not even close. It's not even close. And the media personalities as well, for the simple fact that me and Andy, we're betting our opinions the same way those people are. So,
sure. Yeah,
we're on the stage and we got the tie on and we got the microphone on our heads, but we're doing what you do. That's the difference. We're all doing the same thing. We're all trying to get a piece of that parimutuel pie. So, there's a different, I love the attention, don't get me wrong, and I've been accused of, his everyman bullshit is just an act. No, it's not an act. I'm a horse player and a fan before anything else in this life at the racetrack. Before I'm a track announcer, a TV color guy, a seminar host, I am a fan and a horse player before anything else. We're all on the same level. And I think that's why there's an accessibility to us that is different. Going up to Aaron,
I think there's also a curiosity too, and the Buck, our good friend Buck. Buck has described me as the camp pup. He's like, you just wander around and everybody pets you. He goes, you just like talking to everybody, and they like talking to you. But there's like a curiosity to it, you know what I mean? And I think that's the thing, is the common thread. You have it, Andy has it, you know. Several people throughout the industry has it, like. You know, you genuinely are interested in what this person's thinking. You know, what brought you here today? Who do you like? What do you get? You know, is this the first time you've been to the races? And I think that that's something that's unique to this sport.
Sundays, we didn't have radio. We had the best broadcast spot in the world, I don't have to tell you. Sundays, we didn't have radio. I would take my cooler. I would take my cigars. I'd pop the TV out. I'd sit there and bet horses all day. And there was no banner. There was no fanfare. It was me betting horses. More often than not, I used to have to fight with people because they'd want to know why I was there. And they weren't allowed up there because I would just tell them that this is where I broadcast from. So I used this as my office, essentially. And it really was. It was my office. Because it's one of the best spots in all of Saratoga. And I would just sit there all day and have fans come up. And I was with a girl for on and off for 14 years, and she just watched one day. We tried to get out of there a half a dozen times to go into town. I had promised her a racing free day, and I wanted to stay to bet a horse in the third race. The horse won and paid like $14, so I was alive in the pick five, and we wound up staying for a little bit. And anyway, long story short, it didn't stop. people just kept coming over. And at one point, like after the fifth race, I was like, come on, let's go. She's like, you can't go anywhere. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, these people just keep coming over. Like, you can't go anywhere. Like, this is what, you have your job because of these people. It was one of the only smart things she said to me in 14 years. She's like, you can't go anywhere. And believe me, I didn't want to go anywhere. I wanted to stay right there. I wanted to finish getting drunk. I wanted to finish hitting my pick fives, and I wanted to finish smoking my cigar. I didn't want to go walk around town. No offense to town. I didn't want to go walking around town. I walked around town plenty. And at one point, she looked at me. She's like, you haven't gone 15 minutes without a visitor. I was like, come on. She's like, I've been sitting here watching this all day. She's like, I'm so proud of you, yet I don't understand how on an off day. And I was off for the whole day. I didn't do talking horses that Sunday. I had no work. I just sat there. She's like, I just don't understand how, like, I was like, this is what we do. If you're here for the right reasons, nobody starts working in horse racing for a paycheck. You're going to be severely disappointed. If you're just there for a paycheck,
no.
You're going to be severely disappointed in your paycheck, especially when you start out.
In all honesty, I've never seen anybody successful in any industry that did it just for the paycheck, including Hollywood. You know me. I've been around Hollywood a lot. Every actor, every successful director, producer, I mean, Billy Koch could tell you the same thing. The one common thread is you love the industry first and the rest follows. If you're in it for the money, those are the guys that come and go.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
And if you look back and think about it, it holds true with horse racing too.
Yeah, it'll hold true with anything, but you really ain't going to make any money in horse racing. You really ain't going to make any money.
The standard joke is to make a small fortune in horse racing, you better start with a large one.
Exactly. 100%. That's a great way to put it. 100% right.
Hey, another segue here. We lost a very influential guy, and I know that he was important to you too, Dwayne Lucas, the coach. Give us your thoughts on that. I know you talked about it on your show, and I was going to ask you to kind of talk a little bit about him on this one.
Yeah, he was a pioneer, trailblazer. You know, people talk about the super trainer now with all these guys with 300 horses and setting up shop at all these different places. Wayne was the first one. And he was remarkable.
Nice guy, too.
Yeah, he was remarkable around the racehorse, great with the fans. Talk about accessible, to take kids into the paddock and into the winner's circle for a win picture when he was around. An excellent horse trainer. An excellent businessman. You know, he was the first guy that really had to worry about more than four legs and a tail. He had a multi-faceted operation. I mean, he was running stables in California and Kentucky and New York and Florida simultaneously. Jersey was a hotbed of racing back then. You know, there was one point I remember when I was a kid. I spent a lot of time at Monmouth Park, and my dad had horses down there. And you know, you're in New York a lot, and but as a fan of the game, I'm aware of everything going on. And you know, Wayne had horses everywhere. And you said to yourself, you know, as the son of a guy who had six horses, you know, and saw how hard it was to run that operation. And then you'd go to Belmont, and back then trainers were limited to one barn, 36 or 40 stalls. And you saw just how difficult and how many people it took to run that operation. And then you say to yourself, well, how's this guy doing it fivefold? And there's no internet. You know, there's no cell phones. If you don't get somebody on the landline, you're not getting them. And if they don't call you back, there's no way to track them down. To run that operation in the 1980s and be as successful, I mean, think about this, Mark. He won 15 Triple Crown races, the last in 2024 at the age of 88. I can't imagine anybody's ever going to win a Triple Crown race older than 88, by the way. 20 Breeders' Cup races. He won, there was originally 7 races. The only original race he didn't win was the Breeders' Cup Turf. He won all the other original 6, the other 6 of the original 7. most of the multiple times, by the way. He was as remarkable an individual as possible, and I said this on radio 6 or 7 years ago. I don't know if any individual, I didn't even say this on my show, I'm saying it on yours. I don't know if any individual had an impact on their profession more in any walk of life than Wayne Lucas. Doctors finding cures for diseases. Like, yeah, those are all, you know, fantastic. And obviously far more important. But the impact on the, you know, and that has an impact on the population in the world. Finding a cure, you know, building a better wheel, different. And as far as impacting the profession and changing the way guys and gals had to do pretty much everything, if they wanted to keep up with this guy, I don't know anybody. I can't give an example or have an example given to me of somebody that impacted their industry and their profession more than Wayne did.
The closest I've ever heard was Tom Landry in the 80s. But I don't even think that really sums it up as well.
Yeah, Tom Landry had to worry about one team. This guy had to worry about five racing operations.
Yeah. And you know the part, and I know I'm not trying to underscore that. I think you're absolutely right. It is amazing that he did that before anybody else even thought about doing it. The other thing that really stood out to me about him was he always took time for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was the kindest guy. It didn't matter if he was running late and he's going from the barn to the track and somebody comes up to him, he'd stop.
He got it. That was it. I mean, the three words you could describe Wayne Lucas in is he got it. That's it. He understood. What would the kids say now? He understood the assignment. He just got it. He understood what he knew what you had to do. He knew how to act. He knew what you had to do.
And it was in just a really, I know, you know, I mean, you know me, I've always looked up to Baffert. I like Bob. I know, and I like him personally. He's a great guy. And I've always admired, you know, what he's done. And it says a lot to me that Bob looked up to Wayne. So
it was a wonderful, sure Bob put out a wonderful tribute. Bob really.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I know that he watched Wayne and really, you know, you could tell, I don't want to, you know, put words in his mouth, but you could tell that Wayne was important to him.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And I'm sure this has been pretty tough on him because those two were, you know, he's, you know, that's like the, you know, the generation above him. But Wayne was just a nice guy. And I know he supported, I mean, there was it was another program was talking about him the other day. And they were talking about how many people that he was responsible for putting into this industry.
Oh, forget about it. You can't even, you know, I don't like to go into the tree. Because you don't want to offend anyone. But
sure.
Two dozen, I mean, at the very least, if you just go to the first two or three branches, it's at least two dozen trainers.
That. And then they were talking about how many people, because as everyone knows, he was notorious for grabbing a kid and taking him to the winner's circle.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, forget about that. Forget about all of that.
But they were talking about how many of those kids later went on to work in the industry.
This is what I'm saying. Just forget about all of that. I'm telling you that he's probably responsible for 25 trainer's licenses that we know of.
Oh, that came out of his barns.
That just came off his tree.
Yeah.
Right, because we're at a point now where there are his assistants, then their assistants, and then their assistants. Like, Amelia Green is the fourth generation from the Lucas tree. Now, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it is. It's wild. It's absolutely wild.
And the amazing thing to me was he would stop and talk to anybody. You'd always see him, especially at Churchill. I always noticed him on the backside up against the rail talking to some other trainer. And you know that they're probably picking his brain. I mean, he was always accessible to anybody.
Yeah. Good guy. Real good guy.
And just a very nice guy. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to wrap up the show with, you know, giving a little tribute to Wayne. He was a great guy. He supported old friends, and, you know, old friends is important to me. He actually would send some of his memorabilia, Winter Circle photos, and I don't know what all, that he sent to Michael to help with horses and help, you know, a lot of those horses he trained. So yeah. He gave Michael a lot of things that tied to those horses and other famous horses. But yeah, just a great guy and definitely will be missed. And now it's important that everybody continues on his legacy and learns something from it and does some of the same things he did.
For sure. For sure.
On and off the track. Well, yeah, we would be amiss if we didn't end the show by plugging King Umberto's. Still a favorite, I assume?
Yeah, of course. I got to get over there. So I haven't been over there in a while. That mom a couple of weeks ago. She had a great time.
I was going to ask you really, you know, I know we got to get going, but one thing that I'm always curious about is, you know, what are the hot spots in the summer in Howard Beach? Like, where do you like?
No, I don't know. I'm out of that neighborhood. I'm not here. Nothing going on here. Nothing going
you can't
on.
Give
I spend most of my time out. Spend most of my time out on the island playing horses in my friend Andy's backyard with the pool and the dogs. Nice and peaceful.
Well, we're definitely going to have to get a dinner put together at King Umberto's. I haven't been there. It's been too long. And we definitely have to coordinate and get to Saratoga together.
Sounds good.
All right. I really appreciate you being on the show. Again,
take a
moment. Go see Big A's show, Big Time with the Big A. It's on YouTube and every place that you can get your podcast. We appreciate you being on with us today. Places we support is No Fallen Heroes. No Fallen Heroes is one of the only organizations that supports our veterans and first responders in multiple ways. Take a moment, look at their website. I don't get a penny for pushing them. I push them because I believe in it. It was founded by a fellow naval aviator, Matt Wiz Buckley, brother from another mother, and an amazing, much better pilot than I was. Definitely want to plug MB Gray Healthcare. If you guys have employees, you have healthcare issues, look her up. She's the best of the best when it comes to healthcare consulting. If you're in New York, go to King Umberto's. If you're in Miami, go to the Palm. And if you're anyplace else, go check out a racetrack. Thanks for joining us today, Big A. We really appreciate you.
You got it, buddy.
And I look forward to seeing you soon.
See you soon, pal.
This has been Hollywood and Horsepower, and we'll see you guys again next week.